Well, hello out there, everyone in podcast land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies, and this special episode of Full Disclosure, which we are calling Full Disclosure Minis. That's right. Why is it a mini? Well, because when the summer movie season hits, everyone, there is just a literal avalanche of movies that we want to review and talk about. But you know what? Life gets busy. A lot of us are doing things, and there's just so much content to cover that sometimes only one or maybe even two of us can see a movie at a time. And in that instance, you will still get these episodes of Full Disclosures to give you the front row's thoughts on these movies, but it might just be a solo effort like it is today with me, Jeremy Gechner, the editor-in-chief of the Front Row Network, and I am here to give you this Full Disclosure mini on X-Men Dark Phoenix. So a little bit of housekeeping to go up here. So if anything, you have just heard the latest episode of Pop Culture Draft Night. I am proud to announce that show now has its very own feed. So if you only want to listen to Pop Culture Draft Night, or if you want to get a ton of the bonus stuff that Phil Rockwell and the crew are going to be putting out from that show, you will want to go and find that on your podcast platform of choice. Search for Pop Culture Draft Night and make sure you are subscribed. And you, of course, will still hear one episode a month from that show here on the Front Row feed. But if you want even more content from Phil and the crew up there at Pop Culture Draft Night, you will want to go find them. So again, search for Pop Culture Draft Night in your podcast platform of choice and make sure you are subscribed. Also, later this week, you're going to hear the first of our Comic-Con coverages. We went to Comic-Con St. Louis a couple of months ago and got to interview a ton of people, including our old friend Thomas Ian Nicholas, Lou Ferrigno, the original Hulk, Brian Krause from the original cast of Charmed, among a ton of others. You will want to listen to that. And then on Friday, the latest episode of Guilty Pleasures with Lou here is coming out on the Patrick Swayze action epic from the 80s, Roadhouse. So again, you will not want to miss that. And again, if you have not found us on NPR Illinois, you can go to nprillinois.org and search for the Front Row Network and see us there. We are, of course, an NPR podcast. So Full Disclosure, Dark Phoenix. Again, for Full Disclosures, even for Full Disclosure minis here, we talk about the movie as if you have seen it with us. We do not hold back any spoilers. We talk about every single thing. So if you have not seen Dark Phoenix and you want to and you don't want it spoiled, stop this podcast, bookmark it, come back to it later. It will be here for a very long time. But you've been warned. Full Disclosure on Dark Phoenix starts right now. Death does happen in this movie, folks. Okay, so this is, I believe, the sixth film in the first class iteration of the X-Men film universe, if I remember correctly. Now, it's also undoubtedly going to be the final one in that, because as most of you probably know, or some of you may not, the X-Men properties have been bought up by Disney in the 21st Century Fox deal. So now the X-Men will be in the same cinematic universe as all of your favorite Marvel characters that we've been there. Now, Kevin Feige, the head of Marvel Studios, has said that that is not going to happen for a pretty long time. He said probably like 4 or 5 years before you see such a thing. So with that, they still released this last film in the X-Men proper timeline here. Again, the first class one that started with X-Men First Class. And so this was still released near. Now, it is based on one of the most memorable and largely considered one of the best comic book arcs of all time, the Dark Phoenix saga. Now, in that saga, Jean Grey, in this movie played by Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones, she, in a mission to space that the X-Men are on, ends up encountering this cosmic entity known as the Phoenix Force, and she absorbs this force inside her, which makes her, let's just say, a little bipolar, and makes her very, very dangerous to not only all the X-Men, but to the entire planet, and drastic measures have to be taken to ensure that she does not hurt people. And there's also a great battle within herself. And in most iterations, there's also a kind of darkening of the Charles Xavier character and kind of a taking off of the sheen of benevolence that Charles Xavier has always been seen in. And in this movie, they definitely do that. So look, those are the basic beats of the comic book storyline. And look, a lot of those are intact here in the Dark Phoenix movie, although they are very, very rushed. So at the beginning of the movie, Simon Kinberg, the writer and director of this film, who is a producer on a lot of Marvel films and, of course, the X-Men movies of the first class iterations here, he wastes no time in getting us into the action of this. He does not bother to reintroduce us very well to any of our main characters. He assumes that you have seen X-Men Apocalypse, clips, and that you know who all these people are. We're just going to get right into the action here. So as the space shuttle has launched, Charles Xavier gets a call when something goes wrong, and he sends the X-Men up to try and assist in a rescue of the astronauts. And while up there, Jean Grey, of course, she encounters this cosmic force that she absorbs into her to try and protect the rest of the X-Men in the X-Jet. And they think it probably should have killed her, but she somehow ends up all right. And out of this comes her basis instincts. As Charles Xavier puts it in this movie, you know, she's all desire. You know, there's no real, you know, it's kind of like a hedonistic thing, you know, like she is just constantly chasing pleasure, constantly chasing an emotional connection to something, and not really using the logical cognitive side of her brain. And of course, because Jean is one of the most powerful mutants, if not the most powerful mutant of all time, it also makes it insanely dangerous for people, as happens when she loses control of the Phoenix Force at a party that they're having in the woods outside of the X-Mansion, and ends up really setting off a bunch of different flares here. So through this, we learn that Charles Xavier has put up mental blocks in Jean's mind to protect her from certain terrible traumatic things in her past, like a car crash that she had a role in causing that ended up killing her mother and ended up injuring her father so gravely that he did not want to deal with her anymore and willingly abandoned her to Charles Xavier. And it is when Jean goes on sort of a self-discovery mission and she finds out that her father is actually alive despite Charles telling her he was dead, and learns of the way that he was so scared of her that he didn't care. Or as the father puts it, you know, I never got to say goodbye to my wife. Just a really, really terrible moment for Jean. And it's really when she starts to cut loose. And it is when the X-Men confront her at this that Raven, played by Jennifer Lawrence, is actually a casualty of this. She gets impaled with some wood beam that have splintered along this battle lines here with Jean. And this is really what kind of spurs off a lot of stuff, where Charles Xavier has to really examine what his role was in this, whether or not he is always acting in the best interests of protecting his children. And of course, this again starts to put the distrust of mutants out there in the world again. So out of this comes another character named Lalandra, who from the comic books is a lot more complex than we get in this movie here. But she's played by Jessica Chastain here, who is the member of an alien race that was wiped out by the Phoenix Force. But now they're trying to control that force. And now that they see that Jean can, they're trying to find a way to manipulate her into doing their own purposes, which is basically wiping out the planet so that it can be theirs. This all leads to a pretty epic confrontation in New York City and on a train trying to transport the mutants, including Magneto and Nightcrawler and Cyclops and Beast and all of these people to a facility now that mutants are no longer trusted. And in the midst of all of that, Lalandra and her forces, who are insanely resilient to bullets, try to get Jean back and try to absorb the power away from her. And instead of putting the rest of the X-Men in danger, Jean flies her and Lalandra up into space, and both of them blow up in the force themselves, seemingly killing both of them. And in the end of the movie, we see that Charles Xavier has retired. He and Eric Magneto, they are kind of back into their friendship mode. They're going to play some chess. They're going to be bros again. Beast is now running the school. And as the movie is closing, we see a shot pan up to the sky, and we see a streak of orange light in the sky that looks an awful lot like a bird. Could the Phoenix still be alive? And that is where, unfortunately, the X-Men universe ends. So, look, does the movie work? I think the best way to describe this movie is unsatisfying. Let's put it in that way. Now, look, I have a couple of inherent things that I think X-Men movies are just really, really hard to pull off for a couple of different reasons. One, because the team atmosphere means that you have to create a reason for us to care about the team as a whole, and then also the individual people involved in that team. It's a very, very hard dance to pull off. Now, Bryan Singer pulled it off pretty well in that first X-Men movie, and really well in the X2 movie, although, again, you're building off of something you did there. And honestly, they did a pretty good job of this in X-Men First Class, and definitely in X-Men Days of Future Past. when they faltered on this is when they really tried to turn it more into a spectacle show of the mutant powers. And look, I get that when we're going into an X-Men movie, that's kind of what we want to see. You know, we want to see these fantastical powers manifested in very cool ways. The problem, I think, that has arisen now is that Marvel and the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done such a good job at staging the fantastical elements of a superhero story that now, unless you can match that, you're really playing at a disadvantage and you have to lean on your narrative. And what unfortunately doesn't work well in this movie is the narrative. It is so insanely rushed in this movie that, you know, again, the fact that Kinberg does not take time to reintroduce us to any of our characters. If you did not see any of the X-Men movie before this and you came in, you could figure out where all these people are, but you would not care about them at all because there is no reason to care about them. You know, and again, we're forging forward here, but I think the other reason why, again, with the prevalence of Marvel and how well they've done their storytelling over so long of a period, it means that when you have these team-up movies, when you have these epic threat movies, they feel earned, that you feel like you've spent enough time with these characters on their lower, quote-unquote, lower-level villains and lower-level adventures, that when you get to something that should be as epic as the Phoenix Saga is, you feel like you've earned it. You feel like you've been on this journey, you know what these people are, and you can really start to explore their powers. You can really start to explore the past decisions they've made. We don't have that frame of reference in this movie. Now, maybe that can be fixed by, you know, doing solo adventures for these X-Men, but I don't know if that, you know, can you really make like a Cyclops franchise the way that Marvel's made an Ant-Man franchise? I don't know about that. I think you probably could. But, you know, in this movie, we move from set piece to set piece to set piece to set piece. And again, that can work. You know, there is some entertainment value that you can glean from that. But if you don't have an investment reason for any of these characters, it really just kind of leaves you like you're watching just a fireworks show. And that doesn't feel satisfying enough in a comic book movie anymore. And especially for a comic book movie adapting one of the most beloved comic book arcs of all time. Now, I will say there is some really good performances in here. Sophie Turner is actually doing really, really good work as Jean Grey in this, and especially playing up the conflict inside of Jean as this base desire forces within her and forcing her to do things that she doesn't actually want to do and hurt the people that are closest to her. Nicholas Holt is doing great stuff here as Beast, especially when we have to meet the demise of Raven. He acts those scenes insanely well. And again, of course, James McAvoy is just doing great work. He never doesn't. But I will say that the gripe I have is that, again, they did this with the original X-Men franchise with, you know, Patrick Stewart and Famke Janssen in X-Men 3. They tried to do a version of the Phoenix Saga. And what worked there is that you had this never-ending belief in the benevolence of Charles Xavier because Patrick Stewart just has that feeling about him as an actor. And James McAvoy, they take such a big moment here at the beginning to really kind of go against what the character of Charles Xavier really stands for in most of the iterations of the X-Men. You know, they really make him seem a lot more selfish and a lot more grandiose and self-aggrandizing. And, you know, it just feels really forced in this. You know, Raven has a very big distrust of Charles that doesn't really feel like it's been there in the rest of the movies. And so unless you have those seeds planted throughout the rest of the movies, it really just kind of feels like you're trying to turn Charles into an unsympathetic character without doing the work to get him there. And, you know, with James McAvoy doing such great work as this character in First Class and Days of Future Past, you know, it just doesn't feel like it's something that should be earned and should be there. And so in the midst of that, you know, you just kind of get a hollow feeling there like, I guess he's not as good and benevolent as I thought he was because that's what the movie's telling me. But, you know, again, it just doesn't feel right. And so the rest of that narrative throughout the movie just feels very hollow. Now, we do get Michael Fassbender back as Magneto. Doesn't really get a lot to do, get some really cool moments as Magneto with some cool special effects and power manifestations. But, you know, ultimately it's just kind of a waste of him. Jennifer Lawrence, you know, the death scene is good. She dies well, is what I can say about it. But again, just a lot of, you know, ad hoc attacks on Charles and other things and distrust of him that just was not planted in any of the other movies. So it feels really weird and forced. And Ty Sheridan actually is doing some really great work here as Cyclops too. But again, overall, the film just feels not satisfying. It's not that you can't get enjoyment out of it. There's, you know, the final set piece on the train is filled with a lot of cool action. The set piece in New York where, you know, they're trying to break into the house to kill Gene, that's actually really good visual effects and stuff. But again, you know, the investment just isn't there. You know, they get rid of Evan Peters very early in this movie. And it just feels way weighted down. And, you know, it feels like you didn't have him on set for a lot of days. So you just found a way to get rid of him type thing. So all of these problems just continue to manifest over and over and over again until, you know, you get to the end of the movie and you just feel like, okay, I guess that's the way it ends, you know? So, you know, personally, what I'm hoping for, I think that this version of the X-Men is done. I think, you know, McAvoy, Fassbender, Holt, all these people are done with these characters. But if Marvel has plans for the X-Men, I really hope it's something more along the reins of a TV series that then we can spin off into these big event films, like something on Disney Plus, that we can really kind of flesh out the adventures of all of these people individually, take some time to build this team, and then get them in a movie that will serve as the, you know, the big adventures of the X-Men that we know. And then you can try to do some crossovers with the Avengers, all that sort of stuff. So that's where I'm hoping that this goes. Like I said, it's unfortunate that this is where this version of the X-Men ends, because there were some great, great films in there. First Class was awesome. Days of Future Past was a masterpiece of comic book filmmaking. But unfortunately, that's kind of where it falls off with the rest of these films. And, you know, that again, that's unfortunate, because, you know, if you've got something like Dark Phoenix and you've got the effects that you can do and you've got a great young cast here, you really think that, you know, it should work better than it does. But unfortunately, it just doesn't. It leaves you a little hollow. So on full disclosure, we give our ratings out of 10. I'd have to give Dark Phoenix, if I'm going to be very, very generous here, I'd give it a 5 out of 10. Again, there's some enjoyment you can glean here. The actors, most of the actors are really putting in the work for you. But it just ultimately falls pretty flat and pretty unsatisfying by the end. So, all right, that's going to do it for this full disclosure mini on Dark Phoenix. Again, look out for our Comic-Con St. Louis reports later this week. And then at the end of the week, the latest episode of Guilty Pleasures on Roadhouse. Again, if you want to find more from the Front Row Network, go to frnpod.com, where you can find some of the articles that we're writing now. You can also find us on the Front Row Network by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter, and of course our new address at nprillinois.org. That's going to do it for this episode of Full Disclosure Mini on Dark Phoenix. For the Front Row Network, I'm Jeremy Gechner, and as always, we will see you in the front row.